This is Pat Cadigan reading a section from Tea from an Empty Cup. The kid had had his choice of places to go, other countries, other worlds, even other universes, a la the legendary exhortation of E.E. Cummings, oddly evocative in its day, spookily prescient now. But the kid's idea of a hell of a good universe next door had been a glitzed out, gritted up, blasted and blistered post-apocalyptic New York City. It wasn't a singular sentiment. Post-apocalyptic New York City was topping the hit line for the 13th week in a row, with post-apocalyptic L.A. and pre-millennial Hong Kong holding steady at 2 and 3, occasionally trading places but defending against all comers. Dora Constantin didn't understand the attraction. Perhaps the kid could have explained it to her if he had not come out of post-apocalyptic New York City with his throat cut. Being DOA after a session in the city wasn't singular either. Immediate information available said this was the 8th death in as many months. So far, no authority was claiming that the deaths were related, although no one had specifically denied it either. Constantin wasn't sure what any of it meant, except that, at the very least, the city would have one more month at the number one spot. The video parlor night manager was boinging between appalled and thrilled. "You ever go in the city?" she asked Constantin, crowding into the doorway next to her. Her name was Guilfoyle Plachette, and she didn't make much of a crowd. She was little more than a bundle of sticks wrapped in a gaudy kimono, voiced by Cartoonland, hair by Vandergraff. She stood barely higher than Constantin's shoulder, hair included. "No, never have," Constantin told her, watching as DiPietro and Celestine peeled the kid's hot suit off him for the coroner. It was too much like seeing an animal get skinned, only grislier, and not just because most of the kid's blood was on the hot suit. Underneath, his naked flesh was imprinted with a dense pattern of lines and shapes, Byzantine in complexity, from the wires and sensors in his suit. "They'll start calling that the latest thing in nervous systems," Constantin thought, mesmerized. "They'll give it a jumped-up name like Neo-Exo-Nervous System, and they'll say it's generated by hot suit wear, every line and shape having a counterpart in the opposite side of the skin barrier, with its own astrological sign." The coroner's cam operator leaned in for a shot of the kid's head and shoulders, forcing the stringer from police blotter back against the facing wall. Unperturbed, the stringer held her own cam over her head, aimed the lens downward, and kept taping. This week, police blotter had managed to reverse the injunction against commercial networks at crime scenes that had been reinstated last week. Constantin couldn't wait for next week. As the suit cleared the kid's hips, the smell of human waste fought with the heavy odor of blood and the sour stink of sweat for control of the air in the room, which wasn't much larger than the walkout closet that Constantin had shared with her ex. The closet had looked a lot bigger this morning now that her ex's belongings were gone, but this room seemed to be shrinking by the moment. The coroner, her cam operator, the stringer, and DiPietro and Celestine had all come prepared with nasal filters. Constantin's were sitting in the top drawer of her desk. Putting her hand over her nose and mouth, she stepped back into the hallway where her partner, Tolliver, was also suffering, but from the narrow space and low ceiling rather than the air, which was merely overprocessed and stale. Plachette followed, fishing busily in her kimono pockets. "So bad," she said, looking from Constantin to Tolliver. Tolliver gave no sign that he'd heard her. He stood with his back to the wall and his shoulders up around his ears, head thrust forward over the archiver while he made notes, as if he expected the ceiling to come down on him. From Constantin's angle, the archiver was completely hidden by his hand, so that he seemed to be using the stylus directly on his palm. Never send a claustrophobe to do an agoraphobe's job, Constantin thought, feeling surreal. Tolliver was such a big guy anyway that she wondered if most places short of arena didn't feel small and cramped to him. "Real goddamn bad," Plachette added, as if this somehow clarified her original statement. One bony hand came up out of a hidden pocket with a small spritzer. A too sweet, minty odor cut through the flat air. Tolliver's stylus froze as his eyes swiveled to the manager. "That didn't help," he said darkly. "Oh, but wait," she said, waving both hands to spread the scent. "Smellin' the primer now, but soon, nothing. Deadens the nose. Use it by the pound here. Trade puts out a lot of body smell in the actioners. Suits reek." She gestured at the other doors lining the long, narrow hall. "Like that Gang Wars module? Strap the trade down on chaises, otherwise they'd have killed the suits, rolling around on the floor, bouncing off of the walls, jumping on each other. Real easy to go native in a Gang Wars module." Go native, Tolliver mouthed, looking at Constantin from under his brows. Constantin shrugged. I didn't see a chaise in there. Folds down out of the wall, like those old Murphy beds? Constantin raised her eyebrows, impressed that the manager was even acquainted with the idea of Murphy beds, and then felt ashamed. Her ex had always told her that being a snob was her least attractive feature. Most people won't use the chaises except for the sexers, Plachette was saying. Not if they get a choice. And there was this one blowfish, he hurt himself on the chaise, got all heated up struggling, cut himself in the straps, broke some ribs, and that, she leaned toward Constantin confidentially, that wasn't even the cute part. Know what the cute part was? Constantin couldn't imagine. The cute part was, his point of view was in this fight at the exact same time and broke the exact same ribs. Plachette straightened up and folded her arms, lifting her chin defiantly, as if daring Constantin to disbelieve. This has always been non-safe, even before it was fatal. That happened here, Tolliver asked, without looking up. Nah, some other place, East Hollywood, North Hollywood, I don't remember now. The manager's kimono sleeve flapped like a wing as she gestured. We all heard about it. Stuff gets around. Constantin nodded, biting her lips so she wouldn't smile. Uh-huh. Is this the same guy who didn't open his parachute in a skydiving scenario and is found dead with every bone in his body shattered? Well, of course not. Plachette looked at her as if she were crazy. How could it be? That blowfish died. We all heard about that one, too. Happened in D.C. They got it going on in D.C. with those sudden death thrillers. She leaned toward Constantin again, putting one scrawny hand on her arm. You ought to check D.C. sources for death trips. Life is so cheap there. It's a whole different world. Constantin was trying to decide whether to agree with her or change the subject when the coroner emerged from the cubicle with the cam op right on her heels. Shot everything I shot, the cam op was saying unhappily. And I said, never mind. We can probably subpoena her footage and see if it really is better than yours. Probably isn't. Go. She gave him a little push. But I just know she was in some of my shots. We can handle that, too. Go. Now. The coroner shooed him away and turned to Constantin. She was a small person, about the size of a husky 10-year-old. Something to do with her religion, Constantin remembered. The Church of Small is Beautiful, something like that. The faithful had their growth inhibited in childhood. Constantin wondered what happened to those who lost the faith, or came to it later in life. Well, I can say without fear of contradiction that the kid's throat was cut while he was alive. The coroner looked around. And in a place like this, imagine that. Should I also imagine how? Constantin asked. How? Classic ear to ear. The coroner smoothed down the wiry copper cloud that was her current hair. It sprang back up immediately. Most likely with a weapon made for that sort of thing, and not just any old sharp edge that might have been lying around. Probably a boning blade. Boning blades are all the rage out there, or rather, in there. In the actioners. They all like those boning blades, and definitely not self-inflicted. Even if we couldn't tell by the angle, this kid was an AR softie. He wouldn't have had the strength to saw through his own windpipe like that. Constantin made a face. Great. You know what's going to be on the news inside an hour. The coroner fanned the air with one small hand. Yeah, yeah, yeah. Game player stigmata. Everybody's heard about somebody who got stabbed in a module and came out with a knife wound. It took 16 stitches to close. And what about the nun who was on TV with the bleeding hands and feet? It's part of the modern myth-making machine. There have been some people who fell off their perch in AR, got all mixed up about what was real and hurt themselves or somebody else. But the stigmata stuff, everybody conveniently forgets how the stigmata of Sister Mary, Blood of the Sacred, etc. got exposed as a hoax by her own order. The good sister did a turn as a stage magician before she got religion. There's a file about how she did it floating around PubNet. Look it up sometime. Fascinating rhythms. The real thing would be extrema ruptura, very serious head trouble, which the experts are pretty sure nobody's had since St. Teresa. Which one? Asked Constantin. The coroner chuckled. That's good. Which one? You know your stuff, don't you? She laughed some more. I'll have my report in your box tomorrow. She went up the hall, still laughing. Well, said the night manager, sniffing with disdain, some people ought better stick with what they know than mock what they don't know squat about. She called the last four words at the coroner's retreating back, but the coroner didn't hear. My apologies if she offended your beliefs, Constantin said briskly. Is there some other way into the room that nobody knows about? Vents, conduits, emergency exit, access? Plachette's fuzzy head wagged from side to side. No, nothing. Constantin was about to ask for the building's blueprints when Tolliver snapped the archiver closed with a sound like a rifle shot. Right. Some great place you got here. We'll interview the clientele now, in the parking lot. Got no parking lot, Plachette said, frowning suspiciously. Didn't say your parking lot. We've corralled everyone at a car rental place down the block. We can do it there. Tolliver looked at Constantin meaningfully. Spacious. Lots of room to move around in. Constantin sighed. First, let's weed out everyone who is in the same scenario and module with the kid and see if anyone remembers him doing or saying anything that would give hints about what was happening to him. Plachette gave a sharp bark of laughter. You know how many people that would be? Constantin nodded glumly. We'll just start with the locals, the clients here, I mean. She started up the hall after Tolliver. But you can see what the kid was doing when he took it in the neck. Constantin stopped and looked back at the manager. I can? Yeah. Surveillance will have it. Surveillance. Constantin was unsure she'd heard correctly. Well, yeah. The night manager gave her a sideways look. You think we let the blowfish come in here and don't keep an eye on them? Anything could happen. Liability, that's a monster. Constantin decided not to ask her why she hadn't mentioned this minor detail a couple of hours before. Can I screen the surveillance record in your office? Just screen it? Plachette looked puzzled. Is that some kind of problem? Constantin moved toward the open doorway of the room where she could hear DiPietro and Celestine bantering with the stringer. No, the night manager shrugged. You want to just screen it in my office? Sure. Constantin didn't know what to make of the look on Plachette's funny little face. Maybe that was all it was, a funny little face on a funny little person who lived in a funny little open all-night world. A funny little open all-night artificial world at that. For all Constantin knew, the night manager hadn't seen true daylight for years. Not her problem, she thought, as she stuck her head through the doorway of the cubicle where Celestine and DiPietro were now busy jockeying for the stringer's attention while the stringer pretended she wasn't pumping them for information, and they pretended they didn't know she was pretending not to pump them for information. Nobody had to pretend that the dead kid had been forgotten. Pardon me for interrupting, Constantin said a bit archly. DiPietro and Celestine turned to her simultaneously. In their identical white coveralls, they looked like unfinished marionettes. Attendants will be coming for him. Before you do a final search of the room, you might want to... Oh, she gestured at the body. Cover him up? Sure thing, said Celestine, and then suddenly tossed something round and wrapped in plastic at her. Think fast. Constantin caught it by instinct. The shape registered on her before anything else. The kid's head, she thought, horrified. The cut across his throat had been so deep he'd been decapitated when they peeled him. Then she felt the metal through the plastic and realized it was the kid's head-mounted monitor. Oh, good one, Celestine. She tucked the monitor under her left arm. I'd dropped that. We'd been filling out forms on it for a year. You drop something? Not this lifetime. Celestine grinned. Her mutton chops made her face seem twice as wide as it was. Constantin wondered if he could sue a cosmetologist for malpractice. Thanks for the vote of confidence, but next time, just send a card. Constantin went up the hall toward the main lobby, Plachette following in a swish of kimono.